Take it away, Simon.
Lovely. Hello, I'm Simon Mercip, and this is Crave, the podcast dedicated to film, music, theatre, television, anything that's been entertaining Steve McCabe and I lately. And Steve, have you been entertained by that incredible vote, the Brexit vote in Britain, being a Brit yourself?
Oh, well, I might not be British much longer. I might turn out to be just English, the way things are going.
That's right, yes.
It's quite shocking, really. It's quite surprising. As I saw somebody comment on the internet just recently, Sense and Sensibility lost to Pride and Prejudice. I wish I'd said that, and I'm going to claim it for my own.
That's quite neatly summed up, isn't it?
Gosh. Rather deft.
Oh, anyway, I just wanted to slip that in because people will know you as being a man of some substance from Salford, no less.
Absolutely, professionally English.
Yes. Anyway, what about this week's podcast?
Well, this week's podcast usually does have, as you say, the usual mix of film and music and theatre and television. But you know, it's a format. It's not a straitjacket. And today we're going to be focusing primarily on film. We're going to be staying in the cinema this week. Not part of a grand plan on our part. It's just, you know, just that's what's come up this week.
Lovely. Yeah, we just go with the flow here. So what is on our filmic hit list? Well, we've got the big budget sci-fi adventure that's just opened this week. It's called Independence Day Resurgence.
We've got a big budget fantasy adventure that brings a 20-year-old video game to film. That will be Warcraft : The Beginning.
You got to watch those colons.
Oh, absolutely.
The not-so-big-budget British romantic comedy with a serious subject matter that stirred plenty of controversy. That's the one called Me Before You.
And the straight-ahead American comedy with a big Johnson and a big heart. Actually, he's not a very big heart, to be honest, but he's a huge Johnson. That will be Central Intelligence.
Right.
Now, obviously, our opinions are invaluable, but we do value yours. So you can email us at podcast@cravepodcast.com if you've got anything to say about what we're about to ramble on about. You can also find us on Facebook, obviously. You can follow us on Twitter at Crave Podcast. We'll repeat all that at the end of the podcast. Or you can just visit our website if you wanted, worldwideweb.cravepodcast.com. But in the meantime, onwards.
Onwards. A capital idea to visit the website. Okay, so we start with this freshly unwrapped film, Independence Day Resurgence, a film which picks up the story of the original movie, but 20 years later. The aliens, which tried and failed to destroy Earth, are back for another shot. Some familiar faces from the first film reappear, Jeff Goldblum, Judd Hirsch and the like. It's crammed with so many special effects. Its special effects have special effects. But was it any good? Did it entertain? Steve, we both attended the premiere. Were you gobsmacked? And I mean in a good way.
I'm glad you added that qualifier. No, I wasn't. I was disappointed. I mean, actually, no, disappointed is the wrong word because I didn't go in with huge expectations. I remain somewhat confused. Why was this film necessary?
Ooh, I don't think necessary comes into it, unless we're talking about the hope of a good return at the box office. I guess that's the only necessity that was being envisaged.
I think there's little doubt that there will be a monstrous paycheck for somebody coming at the end of this. But I'm sorry, I just thought it was dull. Where the original film had characters played by intelligent character actors, this is just a tick box exercise in cliches of action films. Very, very little actual character development. It's simply, how do we get from one big special effects sequence to another?
That's true. I mean, you have to say, in fairness, that the effects are at times pretty stunning, and they actually look pretty good in the 2D, let alone the 3D. But I totally agree with you about the script. Such cliches, and the plot is extremely predictable, and it just kind of rolls out. You know what's coming. I think you're right, Steve. It does get a bit boring. I mean, I suppose there's a bit of pleasure in seeing some of those old hands, like the ones you said, those good character actors like Jeff Goldblum and Judd Hirsch, do their thing. And occasionally they do provide a few laughs, I suppose. But, oh, man, those scenarios, you know, the two pilots who've got a grudge and then later on they make up and become best buddies. And
Except they didn't, you know, did they?
They had the grudge. A bit of grudging resistance.
They had the grudge. But then it was forgotten about. It was never resolved. It just suddenly, well, we've had the punch scene, and now we can move on. Grudge gone.
But they sort of, isn't there a bit of grudging respect, towards the end? Or do you think that's, as you say, just passed over?
It was so fleetingly, so rudimentarily done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so much, I mean, so many cliches in there. Like you say, you've got the pilot, the two young jockeys with the grudge, and then they find a way to settle their differences. You know, that's such a standard trope from films like this. You've got the geeky young nerd who keeps hitting on the gorgeous girl. You've got the, hey, China, we've not forgotten about you, so we'll stick some dialogue in Mandarin in there.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Another box ticked.
Yes, there's lots of ticking of boxes. And the script lines. There's a couple of examples. It's the 4th of July. Let's show them some fireworks.
Clang. Really?
And we have to fight till our last breath.
Honk.
I mean, woo.
People got paid for that, you know, mate.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly suppose this could appeal to some kids. And if you absolutely love seeing the earth being torn asunder, as you see in many films these days, I guess you might get something out of this. But man, if you want a smart film, an engaging film, a challenging piece of sci-fi,
this is not the film to watch.
I don't think so.
Well, look, here's the thought that came to my mind at the end. When we saw the new Star Wars film earlier in the year, I don't know if you had the same experience I did, but it felt to me like it really came alive when the old characters came back on screen. All the new stuff was nice and it was okay, but it was only when Han and Solo and Leia finally showed up that people really went, this is a good film. And I got the same feeling here. When you've got Liam Hemsworth playing Jake Morrison, the maverick who's so mavericky that he doesn't have to shave when he's on duty. When he's on, and then there's Jesse T. Usher playing Dylan Hiller, who's the son of Will Smith's character in the first film. That's the box ticking stuff. That's the tedious, the dull, the square jaw but no depth characters. But when you finally got Bill Pullman on as President Whitmore, then it came alive.
Yeah. I think that's true. I mean, those young people. It was it felt a bit like going through the motions, but didn't it? It felt like it to me anyway.
I'm sorry, I could hear in your voice you're just losing the will to live, even thinking about it. That's terrible.
Hey, look, here's one other thing. Just quickly.
Go on.
I didn't go back and revisit the first film, so I couldn't recall what the aliens looked like in the first film and how much we actually saw of them. But when I saw these aliens, and especially the alien queen with that sort of the head of the queen, I just kept thinking of Sigourney Weaver facing off against the queen in the second Alien movie. I mean, it was a lot bigger, but it kind of brought that back to mind, to me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, sooner or later, somebody's going to start doing aliens that aren't basically anthropomorphic.
Yeah, that's right.
It's astonishing, isn't it, that across, one enormous issue that was raised with the very first film was the fact that you could write a virus on a human computer, plug an Ethernet cable into an alien spaceship and upload it, and it'll work. This time, tying in with this, they managed to get into alien spaceships, and first of all, they fit into them perfectly, and secondly, they had the right number of limbs with the right number of digits on the end to fly the damn things.
Yeah, exactly.
There is so little actual originality and creativity going into what aliens look like. They're basically all humans with a few lumps on them.
Yeah.
And it's been that way since, you know, the early days of Star Trek. There's only so many things you can do with two arms and two legs and a head.
And I, Steve, I was, you know, talking about these amazing scenes of destruction, which, you know, they do some good CGI special effects. But I don't know, I almost burst out laughing when you see this incredible tidal wave. I mean, massive. It's going to wipe out everything. No chance anything could possibly survive except Judd Hirsch in a dinky little runabout fishing boat somehow surfs his way out of this catastrophic wave that lays waste everything else, and he is left surviving, dangling, you know, at the top of the craft up in the midair, rescued by a bunch of young kids. I mean, it was, wow, that's just so
nonsense.
Yeah, nonsense. That'll do.
But you can't. You couldn't kill off Julius Levinson. He was the best character in the film.
He was. I know.
This is not Game of Thrones, mate.
Oh God. And
we do have to mention Jeff Goldblum, though, don't we?
Yeah, he's a very watchable guy. I like Jeff Goldblum. I like him.
I know, but he was playing Jeff Goldblum again.
Oh, I see. I see where you're coming from.
He's astonishing. He's made an entire career out of playing himself. He does it very well. Let's be fair.
he's good at being him.
No one can play Jeff Goldblum as well as he does, to be fair.
Yes.
And he is so engaging on screen. You can't not love him. But
yeah.
I mean, seriously, how many times can he get away with playing Jeff Goldblum?
Well, I don't know how old he is now. He's done it a few times. I'm just actually, just as you said that, because he's, yeah, you're right, actually. He's always like that, isn't he?
Yes. If you can name a single film where he didn't play Jeff Goldblum, I'll be impressed. Yes.
I can't impress you today. I'm sorry. No, fair it's beyond enough. Me. So it almost feels like a redundant question, but I'll ask it just for the sake of our dedicated listeners hanging on our every word. Would you buy a ticket?
They don't need the money.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think I would, I have to say it.
Indeed. I think, as I said to you at the end of the film, when people started applauding, I think I commented, don't clap, it'll only encourage them to make another one.
Well, it looks like they want to anyway, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yes. All right, so that's Independence Day Resurgence. Neither Steve and I particularly impressed, to put it mildly. Lots of slam bang. Oh, I'm not like where that sentence is taking me, but anyway, not much substance to it. Now, let's change tack, shall we, Mr. McCabe?
Why not?
Right, so... the British romantic comedy.
Yes. Yes, yeah, a bit of a change of pace, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's called Me Before You. You mentioned Game of Thrones. This one has in it Emilia Clarke of Game of Thrones fame. Also, actually, another Game of Thrones actor turns up in this, Charles Dance. But rom-com. What do you reckon? Is it a rom-com? I suppose it is, Steve. What do you reckon?
Well, it's funny. It was advertised and pushed very hard as the great weepy for our time. I went to the press screening and they even put little packets of tissues in all the drinks holders in the cinema because obviously everyone was going to be sobbing the way through it. That's how it was pitched.
And did you sob?
No. I laughed.
Okay. So I
genuinely laughed at a few scenes because some of them were actually quite funny, which is odd because it was never meant to be a comedy, I don't think.
Well, okay, look, we should just tell everyone just a little bit about this because we're just to keep everyone up with it. So, I mean, we can certainly say it's a love story, and you've got this an able-bodied, young, working-class, pretty woman called Louisa, who's Emilia Clarke, and... this wealthy, good-looking young man who was previously an all-action hero called Will, who is now a quadriplegic. And Will is played by Sam Claflin. So Lou, that's Emilia Clarke, is hired by Will's mother to be Will's carer and companion. Now, Will has been broody and sarcastic and feeling sorry for himself. He needs some light in his life. Well, you can probably guess where this is going.
In fact, I would go as far as to say that if you can't write the entire story arc from that synopsis, then you're not paying attention.
No. But there's another sort of very substantial backdrop to all this, dealing with the quadriplegic aspect, right, Steve?
Well, there's been a bit of a backlash against the film, to be honest. A lot of people who are themselves wheelchair users have complained that this is a very, very one-dimensional depiction of wheelchair users, and it doesn't represent the disabled community. And then other people have said, well, there is no disabled community. We're all unique individuals. Don't lump us together. My take is it's an extraordinarily shallow depiction of a character, disabled or otherwise. It's just as... Again, a box-ticking exercise, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess they were trying to do a rom-com in a different way, but in doing it in a different way and having a quadriplegic character, it's just opened up a can of worms, and they've, as you say, they've struck quite a bit of criticism. I mean, neither of us have a severe physical disability, so we can't, I suppose, comment from the point of view of someone who has, and I guess I could understand that reaction, but I don't think this isn't a documentary, is it, Steve? It is a light film with a lot of comedy in it and a strong romantic streak in it. I thought it was a rom-com. It's not particularly realistic. I mean, And I think if you were watching it, you'd take it with a grain of salt, wouldn't you? I mean, this young guy, this wealthy, handsome guy. Now, we find out he's had this terrible accident 2 years before, and here we are in this film, and he still looks fit. His body looks muscular. He still looks like he works out at the gym. I mean, that's in itself is a very, very unrealistic depiction of someone who would have been through a terrible accident like that. So I think you just have to dismiss that and say, don't look at this as some sort of serious attempt, really, at depicting the life of a quadriplegic. It is just a romantic comedy, and that's what it is.
And I think that's probably a very, very fair assessment. And it's such a set of cliches as well. There's the classic scene where obviously he's gruff and he's grumpy and he doesn't want to know her and he's dismissive and contemptuous of her. And then one day, because she's chirpy to the point of being irritating.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Oh, God, she's so sweet that it sets your teeth on edge. Irritatingly so. But she comes in one day, does our Lou, the carer, played by Amelia Clarke, as you say. And one day she delivers the speaking truth power speech.
Yes.
Yes, you're crippled, but it's not my fault. Snap yourself out of it. And he does. As simple as that, that's it. He goes, oh, yeah, you're quite right. I should be nice. And suddenly he is.
Yeah.
And it's too easy. There is no meaningful development of the characters of the story there. She just basically slaps him across the face and he goes, yeah, I'm sorry, you're quite right. And then it just settles into your basic rom-com. He addresses her as Clark, which always kept reminding me of Hugh Grant in Bridget Jones' Diary.
Yes. Okay.
She addresses him as Will Traynor, very, very pointedly. It's all very stilted, very trying to be very arch and just coming off across as a bit clunky.
Yeah. And I just think the scenario of, you know, this pretty working class woman and this devilishly handsome aristocratic chap or wealthy chap, I mean, it's all so, would it happen one in a million times? What about this, Steve? At the start of the film, right, we see Louisa. She works in just a cafe.
Yep.
She loses a job.
Yep.
We see her at home, and her family is saying, oh, no, you've lost your job. We're desperate for your money because, you know, Dad's out of work, and what are we going to do, and yep, blah, blah, blah. And then when she does get this work with looking after Will, she turns up day one and then for several days after wearing a different outfit each day. And I thought, right, you've got no money, but somehow, I mean, you could – okay, she might be a fantastic shopper in the op shops, and so that's possible, but I just thought,
But we're stretching it just a tad, aren't we?
This
is the working classes as seen by the elites.
Yeah.
If it's not a documentary about the disabled, it certainly isn't a documentary about the state of the working poor in Great Britain, is it?
No. And as you say, Amelia Clarke, she's so happy all the time.
I mean... It bugged the crap out of me. The pair of them were just so one-dimensional. Sam Claflin as Will Traynor grimaces and frowns and scowls his way through it, and Amelia Clarke's chirpy and cheerful and
Actually, I would look just on her, because I think there'll be a lot of interest from people who know her, obviously, as the mother of dragons in Game of Thrones.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know. So I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I to be honest with you, Steve, I had two conflicting reactions to her performance. I think there was a I don't want to be unkind, but I am just being unkind.
Just say it. I don't think she's listening.
No. Well, who knows? Look, I think there was a heck of a lot of overacting.
Oh, yes.
And cheesily so. I mean, really, she was moving her eyebrows around. It was just sort of like almost a pleading performance.
Oh, God, those eyebrows. They should get a separate credit of themselves, shouldn't they?
But I've got to have – I'm going to throw a little butt into this, and that is that – with all that sort of happy, over happy energy, blah, 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 there's a certain amount of open, to me anyway, kind of a bit of an emotional openness that came across here and there. I sort of made a note, the word engaging, that's kind of what I mean. I think it was overdone to hell, but I got a little bit of a sense of a real person in there, just maybe because she was allowed to be more emotional than he was, obviously being much more restrained, and maybe I just kind of gravitated towards that. But I don't know. Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one there.
I think your kindness and your charity do them a favour they don't deserve. I would say what you're calling restrained on his part, I would call dull and one-dimensional.
Ah.
But that's because I'm in a very, very bad mood having seen Warcraft last night. So I think that's possibly what's driving that.
That's what's driving you. We'll get to Warcraft. So I'll ask the question again, Mr. McCabe. Are you going to would you buy a ticket for me before you?
Before we get to that, I think we actually have to find, in the interest of balance, some good things to say about it.
Okay. Well, I've told you I at times found Emilia Clarke. I did engage with her. And what about Charles Dance? I mean, what do you think of him?
This is the good things I'd like to say about it. I think the supporting cast that surrounded the two leads,
yeah,
was brilliant. I mean, if you look at who you've got Charles Dance playing Will Traynor's dad, Stephen. And every time he walked in the room, I wanted to shout, "Don't trust him. He's a Lannister." But obviously, you can't do that. But he is wonderful. He's a magnificent actor. Janet McTeer, who plays his wife Will's mother, Camilla Traynor, again, an amazing, subtle, beautiful screen presence. I enjoyed every single scene they were in. Although to be fair, there were moments when it got so bad that when Sam was in a hospital bed, I looked at my watch and I thought, well, if he just dies now, I can go home. But when the others were on screen, we got Jenna Coleman. Used to be Jenna Louise Coleman. She's obviously dropped the Louisa now for reasons that she knows better than we do. Jenna Coleman plays Katrina Clarke, Lou's sister, and she can do little wrong, let's face it. And you've got Brendan Coyle, Mr. Bates from Downton Abbey, as Bernard Clarke, Lou's father. You've got a supporting cast who must have been sitting there going, come on, guys, seriously? Do you not see what we're doing? Can you not keep up?
And then there was a very interesting little cameo from a very well-known British actress.
Should we name her or should we save it?
Oh, I see what you mean. Maybe we should. We'll just say you might be surprised by a little guest appearance that comes out of the blue.
But
do you think we should name her?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Probably the finest 90 seconds of the entire film.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think we'll just leave that.
I think we shall. So to answer your question, which I did slightly preempt there, would I buy a ticket? Yeah, why not? It's fun. It's fluff. It would be a great date movie.
Yeah. So that's interesting you see that, because you found a lot not to dislike about it. But if you went into it thinking, I'm just here for a bit of fluff, you probably wouldn't be disappointed, I guess.
As fluff goes, it's really not bad. But that's all it is.
I mean, I have to say, I'm not really into rom-coms. I probably, my first impulse would have been not to go. I'd seen Emilia Clarke in one other non-Game of Thrones film. She was actually in the last Terminator movie.
Yes, she was.
And I thought she was all right. I didn't think she was great, but I didn't think the film wasn't that great either.
No, they gave her very little to do in that.
Yeah. I would have actually been curious to see her and Charles Dance act together in a different setting. That would have sort of pulled me in a bit. But I probably wouldn't have gone to see it. I might have just waited for it to come out on a DVD or something.
There are, to be fair, worse films that we've seen recently.
Oh, I know what you... This is a cunning segue on your part, isn't it?
It was. I think we need to do this, don't we?
I can feel it coming.
I need to get this off my chest.
Okay, go on.
Warcraft. Colon. The Beginning. And yes, that was an irritable colon there.
An irritable colon.
Yes. And was it irritable colons full of? I think we'll just leave that one there.
Leave it hanging.
Yes. I think people know what we're talking about.
We should say this film is based on a video game, right? And this is a video game that's actually about more than 20 years old. Warcraft. It was, And look, I haven't been a fan of video games myself, Steve. Have you been a video game player over the years at all?
No, I haven't.
No, I
have a life.
Yeah. Apparently, millions and millions of people around the world are, and the actual business of video games is huge, isn't it? It's a billion-dollar business. And the people who invented Warcraft, the video game, which is an outfit called Blizzard Entertainment, they are involved in making this film. So they obviously thought, oh, we had a popular video game. We'll turn it into a popular film, they hoped. I've got to say, look, I didn't know the story beforehand, but God, it was familiar. a fantasy world and kings and queens and knights and flying beasts and swords and magicians and orcs, for goodness sake. What does that remind you of?
About a dozen different things, to be fair.
Yes. Holy smoke.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, if I was the estate of J.R.R. Tolkien, I would be talking to my lawyers right now.
Yeah, he was writing all this stuff decades before the video game and the film came out.
Derivative doesn't even begin, does it?
Well, I mean, look, one of the lead sort of, there are orcs and humans in this story, and the lead human hero is a guy called Sir Anduin Lothar. Now, Anduin was the great river in the Middle Earth, wasn't it? I'm sure it's the River Anduin.
Sounds familiar.
And I'm sure Lothar, L-O-T-H-R, Lothar is a name from Middle Earth as well. So, I mean, that's just a steal. I mean, the effrontery of it. It's amazing.
The whole thing was just a blatant ripoff. I mean, the story, such as it is, there's orcs, these great big, huge, enormous, massively fanged creatures who are gratuitously warlike.
Yep.
Needless warriors who are led by a slightly dubiously ethicked leader called Gul'dan, who leads them through a portal into human world.
Yes.
For reasons that aren't made entirely clear.
No.
The humans then have to defend themselves, which means summoning a character called the Guardian. Guess who or what he actually is, because there's no attempt to give us any kind of backstory or exposition here.
No.
He has to try and defend the kingdom, or does he?
Yes.
And then it turns out that the real baddie in all of this is something called the Fell, which is, as far as I can tell, some sort of lichen.
Yes.
Did I miss anything?
No, that's pretty good. And again, you've got some very well-worn sort of little plots within plots. You've got the Guardian has like there's a fledgling magician who's trying to prove himself underneath them. Will he succeed? Will there be a main character who, you know, sacrifices his or her life? There's a bit of a romance between a human man and a half-human, half-orc woman. I mean, there's the sort of things you'd expect to see in any adventure film. There's nothing particularly surprising there. I can like fantasy films, not all of them. There were little bits of it I kind of like, Steve. I'm just to throw a little different spin into it. I didn't know the story of the backstory, as I say. I actually quite liked, having said the name was extremely derivative, the actor who played the lead human hero, Sir Anduin Lothar, is a guy called, an Australian actor called Travis Fimmel.
Yes, wonderful.
And I have seen him before in there's a TV drama that's shown here on Lightbox called Vikings.
Right.
And he plays the lead Viking character in that. And I kind of, he has this kind of blue-eyed intensity that he brings to his work. You feel like there's something violent bubbling away under the surface. He toned it down in this film. But maybe it's because I was familiar with him a little bit before. I was drawn to him, and I thought I think he does quite a good little job, but in a very constrained sort of role, I guess. And, you're quite right. Those orcs are just, I mean, I suppose you can be impressed again with the CGI. They sure make them look like Hulks, don't they? It'd be like the Hulk with fangs, as you say.
Yeah, they're enormous things, aren't they? Yeah.
God. The lead guy, the guy you said, Durotan, I thought he sort of plays the sort of the conflicted role reasonably well. And the half-human, half-orc female is played by an actress called Paula Patton. Mm. In some ways, it's extremely cliched telling of, again, a conflicted character. But she's appealing, I suppose, for me anyway. But you really, really felt like you've seen this before. There's no doubt about that. And there were no particular surprises, I've got to say, which is a shame, which is a great shame.
Yeah, I just felt the whole thing was so forced. The dialogue was, as you expect in films like this, everything is very, very portentous. I come to summon the Guardian. Please, actually have something that's approaching natural language, or actually give it majesty, but don't just make it stilted.
Yeah.
Because it just comes across as clunky, and it doesn't work. I felt a lot of the violence couldn't decide if it wanted to be cartoon violent or actually full-on Game of Thrones violent.
Yeah, that's fair.
The film itself wanted to nod to Game of Thrones, but couldn't quite pull it off. I did get hints of Harry Potter in the character of the Guardian.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good point. I think, yes. Yeah. Let's just sum that up. You've got hints of Game of Thrones, hints of Harry Potter, hints of Middle-earth more than hints. How much more derivative could you get?
But none of the class and character and brilliance of any of those. Because one thing that always hits me in films like this is if you want to create a new world, and this is what successful people like, for example, J.K. Rowling did it magnificently, you have to create a world where the rules and the mythology are absolutely transparent to the viewer.
Yeah.
And you can't just have this feeling that you just pull things out of nowhere as you go along. And that's what it felt like in Warcraft. You never quite knew what was the internal logic of the universe you were looking at. It felt very, very disorganized and disparate. And you can invent new laws and new magic as much as you like, so long as it actually is internally consistent. And I didn't feel it was at all. It just felt all over the place.
I guess, Steve, the fact that neither you or I were familiar with the video game may influence our view. I mean, if I'd spent the last 20 years playing Warcraft, the video game, I would know all this stuff already. But that's no excuse, really.
That does ask the question, are they artificially constraining their audience? If you could only really enjoy this film if you're already a Warcraft fan, then aren't you, by necessity, limiting how many people are going to enjoy it?
Yep, good point. Hey, by the way, remember a few weeks ago I was telling you about a new TV drama I'd started to watch called Preacher? This was, again, on Lightbox. It was based on a graphic novel. And
yes, you mentioned this. Sounds brilliant.
It would have had a bit of a Tarantino edge to it. Now, the two leads in Preacher are the actors Dominic Cooper.
Oh, yes, there's a name.
And Ruth Negga, who plays the former girlfriend in Preacher. Well, what do you know? Dominic Cooper and Ruth Negga are the king and queen in Warcraft, playing alongside each other again in a completely different setting. It was just kind of odd to see them, having only seen them a few days earlier in southern Texas, speaking with a southern American drawl, to pop up as the king and queen in one of the human worlds of Warcraft. It was all a bit odd, I thought.
It was. Another character actor I did notice was Ben Foster, who plays the Guardian, Medivh.
Yes. Now,
the last time I saw him, he was Lance Armstrong in The Programme.
Ah, right.
But
okay.
This time, all I could think of was he was trying very, very hard to look like Tim Roth playing Jesus.
Actually, Tim Roth, you're right. Yes, you're quite right. He did have that look about him.
He had that look about him often. And with the long hair and the beard and the hood over him, you're trying to figure out what messages and what signals they're trying to send with this film. I mean, look, don't even bother asking. I think you know if I'd buy a ticket for this. Look, I got a pass from the studio to see it. I still want my money back.
I like some fantasy films, but I just think the degree to which, and I wasn't familiar with Warcraft, so if you're a Warcraft fan, you're going to see it. And if you're a big fantasy film fan, you're probably going to see it. But, man, I just felt, I was just seeing Tolkien and all these other things all the time. It really removed a lot of genuine viewing pleasure for me. And I wouldn't buy a ticket again, really. So sad to say. Gosh, we've been laying waste to all before us, Steve. But maybe you're gonna lighten the tone somewhat at the end of the podcast. You have been, we're waiting all podcasts to deliver this line to you.
Go on, let's hear it.
You have been between the rock and a hard place at another movie. Go on.
I am at a loss. I have no words.
Do you know how long it took me to come up with that line?
Oh, a lifetime, I should imagine. Your entire career's been building up to that line. I can tell.
Oh, man, I peaked too soon.
Yeah.
Okay, this is something called central intelligence. Tell me about it, because I haven't seen it.
Well, here's the thing. if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, of all the films I'd be going to see in the last fortnight, which one was I looking forward to least? I think it would probably have been this. The trailers made it look like a clunky, by-the-numbers, really naff buddy movie comedy.
Yeah.
That's what I was expecting. And I went in, as a result, with very, very low expectations, thinking, okay, it's only an hour and a half long. I can live with that, get on with it, then I can go home and have a beer. And that was what I went into this film with. And I came out thinking, that was actually surprisingly entertaining.
Ooh, okay.
So the basic setup is, you've got a character called Calvin Joyner, played by Kevin Hart, who back in high school had been the Golden Boy. In fact, his nickname was the Golden Jet. And he'd helped out a character called Robbie Weird Dick was the character's name.
really?
Who was bullied and abused by the other kids in school, and Calvin had helped him out. We then moved to present day, and Calvin, who was originally the Golden Boy, is now just an accountant.
Right. Which
apparently, and I'm sure my father and my brother and my sister-in-law might disagree with this, apparently that's the most crushingly boring and tedious job known to man. So he's an accountant, and
yes,
a character. This character Bob, who turns out to have been Robbie from school, played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah,
there's The Rock, and obviously Kevin Hart, who plays Calvin, is the Hart. We got that bit, yeah. So
yeah,
so he shows up in his life, and he's inveigles his way into his life, and then it turns out apparently that he's a CIA agent who's gone rogue, or has he? And he tries to drag Calvin into an attempt to track down an agent called, believe it or not, the Black Badger.
Okay,
I'll just leave that one hanging for a second because
could be a character from Harry Potter as well.
It could indeed, couldn't it? Yeah. So anyway, so that's the setup, and it's flimsy, obviously, it's preposterous. But they managed to work enough warm, decent humour into it. It's very broad in its approach, but the dialogue is sharp. Dwayne Johnson, Mr. The Rock, whatever we're calling him today,
yeah,
you can tell he's trying to follow a similar career arc to Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he's a significantly better actor.
That wouldn't be difficult.
Well, again, he's an actor.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
So he's actually doing a decent job of it. You know, he's done his action film stuff, and he's now doing the more heartwarming and comedic stuff. You can see he's trying to show, hey, I've got depth as an actor. And he's actually not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
He's entertaining.
He's hard not to like, I think. He's got a bit of a twinkle in his eye, hasn't he?
Well, it's funny, the way the character is set up in this, he's given an interesting amount of vulnerability that I think actually kind of makes it work. It's what softens him enough to make him engaging with. In fact, they even depict him to begin with as a complete dork who's a huge fan of unicorns and Twilight. And just as you're thinking that kind of tweeness is getting a bit old, they do start to back off on it. But they round out the character a little bit more than you'd expect, and it's surprisingly well done as a result.
And I guess, Steve, that all these sort of films, you say, as you say, it's a classic buddy movie. It's the way the two leads spark off each other, whatever sort of chemistry they can engender, which is really going to make it fly. And it sounds like that these two guys managed to do that really well.
They do it better than I ever expected they would. Yeah, the trailers make it look like it's going to, like you've seen all the gags in the trailer. It has that feel about it.
Yes, yes.
Like okay, the 2.5 minutes you just showed me are probably all I need to see of this film. And if you go in with that idea, you're not doing it justice. It's better than you expect.
Okay.
Which does sound like damning with faint praise, I realise. But it's probably the film I enjoyed most.
Well, on the basis of that, I'd probably go and see it, I think.
You could do a lot worse.
I need some
light
relief, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Not only could one do a lot worse, one did.
One did. We both did.
Last night.
We're licking our wounds.
I'm sorry, do I sound bitter here? I do, don't I?
Oh, understandably so. All right, so we've got one film that you're recommending, and I'll support that recommendation, and three which we were found some difficulties with this week, and two particularly. So, okay, never mind. Hey, Steve McCabe, I remember you last time telling me that Lulu and Leo Sayer were coming up very soon. That must be really, really soon now.
This time tomorrow, I'll be in Auckland looking for a car parking space. They're doing two shows at the Civic in Auckland. They originally were scheduled to play just the Sunday evening, but apparently it was so popular they've added a matinee show. So they're doing two shows tomorrow.
I hope I've got this. God, I could be making an incredibly embarrassing ass of myself here, but I'm isn't one of the great Lulu songs from To Sir With Love?
No embarrassment, no arse.
Phew, because that's a great song.
Shout, you're thinking of, aren't you?
It is.
To be fair, I don't really know a whole lot of what else she's got to offer there. It's nostalgia on a plate, really, isn't it? But it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I saw Leo Sayer, believe it or not, at the Davenport Theatre in Stockport back in about 1982. And my recollection was he was a very, very engaging performer.
I can imagine he would be. I can imagine him being very good in front of a live audience. Yeah.
Yeah, he certainly did. I mean, we're going back longer, more years back than I really care to think about. But my recollection is he's actually quite a sweet presence on stage. So it sounds cheesy and it sounds corny, but I have a feeling it's actually going to be fairly entertaining.
Yeah. Hey, there's one other big act coming to New Zealand pretty soon, I think very soon. The American comedian and actor Billy Crystal's nearly here.
Yes, he is. He's a month away.
Okay. And I just mentioned in passing, with the death of Muhammad Ali the other week, I was just having a look around the internet of what people were saying, and I came across his eulogy at the funeral service in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
And he delivered a really, really good eulogy. I didn't know that he'd known Muhammad Ali since they were both quite young men. And they'd been friends for many, many years.
Oh, wow.
And they'd been to each other's houses, and they called each other up. And Crystal delivers a really nicely paced and scripted eulogy. And that in itself, you can find it on YouTube, that in itself is worth looking at. But in it, he makes a reference to a performance he gave in the late 70s. So this is 20 years before. No, I'm saying more than 20 years before, when there was a big event, a big gala event, a Hollywood-style thing, big dinner, more than dinner, it was at an arena. 20,000 people turned up to honor Muhammad Ali.
Wow.
And Billy Crystal is asked to do a little stand-up performance.
Oh, dear.
And what he does, and again, you can see it on YouTube, and it's really worth seeing, he has written a 10, 15-minute monologue, almost like a little one-man play, but in 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
telling the story of Muhammad Ali's life.
Wow.
In which he mimics Ali and also mimics the voices of other well-known boxing commentators to tell the story of the boxing, the dodging the draft, and all that sort of stuff. And he's doing it live.
Now, this sounds like it's got the potential to be clunking, embarrassing, and awkward.
It does sound like it, but as you see, because what they do is they have a little in the screen, they have a little box where you see Ali's face watching live in the audience and Ali is utterly engaged, and it's an amazing live performance. I mean, as you imagine, the pressure to get it right.
Yes,
incredible. I really recommend you have a look at it. It's a wonderful piece of live theatre. So just go on YouTube and just got Billy Crystal and Muhammad Ali, and I'm sure you'll find it. So if he can, I just thought watching those two things, I thought this guy is really, he's got a lot of talent in terms of a performer, a writer. He's got a richness to his backstory. I think it could be a heck of an evening to see him, even if he's just sitting around just chatting. I think it could be a hell of an evening when he comes here, and well worth considering, I reckon.
That does sound very, very interesting. He's going to be at the ASB Theatre in Auckland on the 21st and the 22nd of July.
Oh, okay. Right.
So that one's definitely got potential, yes.
I don't know what the ticket price is, but I suspect it might be more than £5.
Well, more than likely, yes. Obviously, there's a link to ticketing information on our website, so if anyone's interested, you can get it through there. It looks like it's going to be a really good show. They're describing it as an evening of sit-down, which I guess... at his age, he's earned the right not to have to stand up and earn his money,
exactly.
I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
Also tonight, I think I mentioned this last week, Steel Panther.
Oh, yes.
Hair metal band. That's tomorrow night at the Power Station. I'll be there for that.
Good.
That's going to be fun. And then we've also, the big film that's coming up very shortly is opening very soon, is Our Kind of Traitor.
Oh, Our Kind of... Okay, that one slipped me by. What's that one about?
This is based on the John Le Carré novel of the same name. And we've got Ewan McGregor, we've got Damian Lewis, we've got Naomi Harris. Top cast. Stellan Skarsgård.
Yes, yes.
They're all in it. It's getting good reviews around the world, and that one's going to be previewed in about a week and a half time.
Okay.
So we should definitely be talking about that. It looks brilliant.
Is Stellan Skarsgård, is he the guy who's playing Tarzan in this new Tarzan movie that's about to come out as well?
Playing Tarzan in the new Tarzan? No, not that I'm aware of.
Well, there is a new Tarzan movie that's about to come out. I've seen the trailers.
Yes, there is.
And I think the lead actor has got a Scandinavian name. And forgive me, when I heard you say that, it made me think, is that the same guy? But I might be...
Well, oddly enough, he's got a Scandinavian name, and that name is Skarsgård.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's Alexander Skarsgård.
Oh, Alexander. Okay. You see my confusion.
Well, yeah, given that they share a surname. I'm actually looking him up right now, to be honest. Are they related? wow. I mean, it'd be a hell of a coincidence. I don't know if it's like the Scandinavian equivalent of Smith.
We've got a vast Scandinavian audience out there, of at least one that I know of, and perhaps they will be able to advise us.
I believe the gentleman you're talking about is not technically Swedish, though.
No, he's Norse. Yes. Norwegian.
Here we go. Eldest son of famed actor Stellan.
Ah, there you are. There you go.
So you weren't right, but you weren't also completely wrong either.
Yeah. I don't feel such a chump. Hey, what's going to say? Another film that's not too far away, Steve. I think it might be still maybe a little way away. I'm kind of interested to see what the reunited team of British director Paul Greengrass and American actor Matt Damon do with yet another Jason Bourne film. I think that's not too far away.
I think this is called the Bourne Repetition, isn't it?
Quick, mate, write that down. Copyright that, would you, please?
Well, I've seen the trailers. They were plugging it again before at the opening of Central Intelligence.
Yeah,
that one's getting flogged to death in the trailers. It looks a little bit too intense and a bit sort of frowny and bangy to me. But you know, we don't prejudge.
No, we don't. All right. Anyway, lovely. We can talk about that another time. I think we've run out of topics to cover, have we not?
We've had a good old natter there, though, mate.
We have. So, hey, we've just been having a good old yarn here. If you want to join us and have a comment, please do. We'd like to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
We're on Facebook, of course. We're on Twitter @CravePodcast.
Fantastic. And so, without further ado, I'm Simon Merceb.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week. See you later.
Cheers.